Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scope. And now, here are your hosts, Jared, Adam, and Shane.
Hey everybody, The Scope coming to you live to tape, Jared, from Convergence 2016.
Hi!
It has been years since we have been here, and we thought, what the hell, let's do it again.
Well, we've been here every year, we just haven't been recording recently.
Yeah, we're lazy and we're assholes.
We did a series of vlogs, I think 2 years ago was our last big Convergence presence.
But now we are doing something different. We're doing a mobile con panel. I've got Jared to my left. Jared, what are you drinking? And tell us your favorite Star Wars Cantina alien. Go.
Wow, that's quite the question. I am drinking a Blue Moon. Just going to get that
inside
on there.
Joke.
Favorite Cantina alien. I kind of like, what's his name? The little short guy.
By name.
The little short guy.
I totally forget his name. Snaggletooth?
Snaggletooth is good.
Yeah.
Sitting to Jared's left, we've got Khan Darling. Yeah. Romeo, he's a lover, not a fighter. But some of these topics may make him...
a fighter?
Put some punches in. Romeo, mm-hmm. You heard Jared's question. What are you drinking? Favorite Star Wars Cantina alien. Go.
I am drinking Excelsior Blonde. It's rather tasty.
One of two. This is like one of those mega tweets.
You know what? I'm going to say this, since this is where we first met him, Chewbacca.
Wow.
That's a good one. I guess I didn't even consider that.
So,
not bad. Job.
And technically to us, all of them are aliens. We could have said Han Solo.
Yeah.
I would have said Han Solo.
Oh, that's true.
Who is a Tatooine local, I guess. What is the race that is a local race on
Jawas?
When we don't even know what they are. By the way, I'm Shane. I am also a Scope member, one of two here. Adam, not here, Jared.
No.
I am drinking a screwdriver, unusual con drink for me, but I felt like orange juice. My favorite Cantina alien, which is the best Cantina alien, is that creepy little devil guy that sort of looks back and forth. Like, you know that guy's up to some shit, and he doesn't care that he is.
Well, we don't see where his hands are, and that's what scares me the most.
Was he vaping? I forget. Which one was vaping?
He was vaping in 76, so there we go. So I'm calling this Congoers in Cantinas Consuming Cocktails. Romeo coined it as the C4 Collective. Really, this is just a special edition of our Scope Nerd Roundtable on location. You can hear the din. It's very exciting. By the way, my wife is sitting to the right, and she's laughing at me.
I'll be the angry vagina.
She's the angry vagina. That is her drink and her favorite Cantina alien, by the way.
We should get my wife in here, and then we have the Scissor Sisters of Angry
Vagina. Wow.
I want to know what's in the Angry Vagina cocktail. What goes into
it? It's
that?
A Bloody Mary.
There's a lot, yeah.
This is it.
All right. Bloody Mary, double the bloody.
With the spice.
With the spice.
Some Tabasco sauce is in there.
So this is a two-part conversation, Jared and Romeo.
Okay.
First part, we're dealing with the con as a whole. We're dealing with nerd and geek culture as a whole, because I think Romeo's got good perspective. He's on fire, ladies and gentlemen. Our next episode will be definitely more about specific nerd pop culture type stuff, which we are known for.
Yes.
Sound good to you, Jared?
It sounds great.
Romeo,
to me.
Sound good?
Sounds gorgeous.
It literally sounds good to me.
So
I've got earphones in.
What I always like to do when we are at a convention, for the people that don't listen to the show and don't go to these things, I sort of like to explain to everyone what a con is, and especially how Convergence differs from the hundreds of conventions that are across the country. I mean, I think that for those of the people that have been to, like, San Diego Comic-Con,
right,
this is quite different in terms of what to expect and what you do. So, Convergence has been around since 1999, so I think we're in year
17.
It spun out of MiniCon, Jared, which I never
Correct.
Went to.
Yep.
So
I went to two of them.
Why don't you explain to everybody what the genesis of that? Romy, you didn't ever went to MiniCon.
I only went to it after it became the 12-person con of really bad, smelly BO.
The boring con, essentially.
Yes.
Boring nerd con. Okay, so Jared,
okay.
MiniCon, you went in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, and the 2 years before it reduced in size.
And it really was it like Convergence, or was it a different?
It was very much like that at its peak. I know that I believe Convergence has exceeded it as far as capacity. I think at its biggest, MiniCon was only like ever 4,500 people.
Okay.
It felt like more, because I don't think they were as good at crowd control back then, for whatever reason. But yeah, it's the sort of thing you've got 4,000 to 6,000 people crammed into a hotel, and there's all kinds of during the day, and actually in the evening now too. There's a lot of programming panels. You can just get into a panel discussion where they're talking about.
We do. Do not like the buddy.
Whatever they want to talk about. You know, this. They, usually, there's some panels related to the theme, but usually there's also panels related to whatever the popular movies and television shows of the time are. Unless you're a stalwart of Star Trek and it's a 50th anniversary and you don't want to recognize that, then you won't find a panel for that.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Adult-only episode right here.
Sorry. No. Yeah, can I swear on this?
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
Fucking A.
Yeah, bring it.
I'm pissed about it.
I know.
I'm livid about that.
I know.
We'll get to that. Sorry.
We'll get to that. So there's dealer rooms, there's cosplay going on, there's a main stage where they host big events, performances and whatnot. In the evening, a lot of the hotel rooms get transformed into themed parties, and you just kind of wander around. You wander around. Romeo has presented his
Woodford Reserve,
his Star Trek festooned. What do you call that? A flask?
I'm writing that down. Festoon. That's going into the
In the 25th century,
title.
They still call it a flask.
Yes.
All right. Good to know.
You can energize this, beam this into your belly, and it'll be fucking awesome.
There we go.
So in the evening, you have what is one of those... What I think is what makes these conventions sort of unique is that we have these elaborate themed parties in the hotel room. This hotel in particular has... a setup conducive to that, in that there are two floors of cabana rooms that surround the pool area, and they're just all decked out, and people are playing music and watching anime and giving out drinks, and basically you roam around and it's a big party atmosphere in the evening.
Romeo, you're a man about town, you've seen things, you've experienced life. Have you been to other non-convergence conventions, non-Minnesota conventions? How does this stack up?
I used to go to MarsCon, and MarsCon to me is Convergence Light.
That's exactly what we said an hour ago. Yep.
And, but I've been to one called Scaricon. It was about 4 years ago, right after my wife and I got married. And it was exactly what you're saying. It was really awkward. It was like if you opened up a huge hall and just stacked up tables, and here are these B to C to D list actors just signing autographs. And then they would have some panels, but they would always just be essentially Q&As with the guests. So there wasn't really any fandom put onto it. And it was really boring.
So do you think that's how conventions were of olden days? I mean, that
I think that's how they still are.
Still are in a lot.
I think it's a difference. A lot of it's the difference between fan-run conventions and more the corporate side, where they're corporations are running them.
Sure.
They just tend to be a little different.
It's a difference between us wanting to meet our heroes, our icons, versus just wanting to meet other like-minded people and geek out. And I think Convergence is meet like-minded people and geek out, and a lot of other cons are just, look what stars we got that you can get their autograph. And that's the only reason to be there. There's no other reason.
Well, let's talk about that, because I went back and looked at the history of Convergence, just because I prepped,
Wow.
I'm an archivist.
He's a real host.
And so back in 99, and especially a few years after that, Convergence had a pretty decent guest list. I mean, guys like Neil Gaiman, Peter Mayhew, Harry Knowles was here for the first year. Now as we're 15 years later, Convergence doesn't really seem to be all that interested in bringing in any sort of huge, big names. I mean, you might get one or two people you would recognize if you are in the world of nerdy pop culture, but for the most part,
I agree.
You're not here to see, the guest of honor.
Well, and for me, it's always been like, personally, and this is, I know a lot of people on the other end that love it, but for me, it's always been like, I like this, that you get people that work in the business, so you'll get more of a visual effects artist, an art director, a costume designer. You'll get scientists, you'll get authors. I think the thing for me in this year it seems to be getting a little bit better, but there was like a 2 to 3 year run that I'm like, are we Minicon? Because it seemed to be all young adult fanfic authors were all the guests of honor. I had no clue to who they were, and it just became...
Do you think that was an intentional... I mean, people in the network of Convergence. Yeah. Was that an intentional thing?
I just think it's a bunch of people that want to get their favorite person in, and then they all got lucky and got their favorite people in at one time.
Why make the effort to get Sam Beckett from Quantum Leap when...
Well, I was on the programming board for 2 years, and programming and guests of honor stuff, it's... Convergence has a policy where they will, A, not pay for a guest, so they will not pay...
Oh, I did not know that.
Most of these other conventions have, like, a... You will be guaranteed X amount of dollars on top of...
Signing fees.
Yeah, on top of 60% of all the stuff you sign, right, to the fee of all you sign. So you get paid to be there.
Is that something that has always been the policy?
Yeah, it's pretty much.
So they pay for like transportation and lodging, right?
And a fee.
No, but here, Convergence.
They'll pay for transportation and lodging, but that's it.
Yeah.
And even then, they will. And the crazy thing, though, is even to this day, there's.
They make you submit receipts.
I've heard people complain about, you know. Why won't you pay for this? Why aren't these people a guest of honor? That kind of thing.
That seems like a lost opportunity to me.
It is.
I mean, I liked it a few years back when they had like Mystery Science Theater people here. They got pretty big crowd reaction.
Wasn't there there was a big fuck up with that where they ended up leaving before their...
Oh, I didn't know. But I mean, I saw them and it was kind of exciting, you know?
Yeah.
Because
like the Bachelor
my biggest issue with Convergence, and you can talk about this, is that I find it sort of silly to go to a lot of the panels because the people that are running them know just as much as I do. So it's like, hey, so you've read this on the internet, and I know the same thing. Right. Why are you an expert and I am not?
That's
they volunteered to be on the panel.
I know. Well,
that's the double-sided of this.
There's no value added. Right. Like, if I want a guy who's making props in Star Wars. Right. I don't want somebody reading about a guy who made props in Star Wars.
Well, and here's, I think, and there's these different levels. Like, there's a lot of fans because, you know, that's my thing. I love to be on panels.
Yeah.
And I love to go to panels. That if there were not panels, even if they're fan run, but if there were not panels, I don't think I'd have zero interest in going to a convention.
Sure.
I have zero interest in going to conventions where it's only sign my autograph, get an autograph.
Or party say.
Right, or party. I literally only like going to the panels. And here's why. Because it's a conversation of like-minded people. Even if they're basically the same knowledge as me, but how great is it when we sit in a room with a like-minded person and we can talk about Star Trek or Star Wars, or even if we have disagreeing opinions, right?
Unless you're talking about how Buffy paid her rent on the TV show.
Yeah. I mean, I
remember that derailing a panel.
That's a deep cut right there.
Yeah. What I don't like about panels... what I don't like about panels, and the reason why this year I took it off, is A, the politics behind who put these panels together, and B, geekdom has really become hate.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, you gain popularity by hating something. And I'm like, guys, can't we just all agree that we live in a fucking golden age?
Yeah.
Who gives a shit if you don't like it? It's totally cool you don't like something.
Yes.
And you shouldn't be forced to like something. But you shouldn't take this opinion that someone's lesser for liking it. And that's where my issue with all these kind of geekdom panels are. You get on a panel, and half the panels I'm on, people will say, like, oh, you shoot down people or whatever. I'm like, I'm usually it's in a defense of something.
Sure, sure.
You know, where I'm like trying to get somebody off their fucking high horse, you know, of hating something.
How'd they get that horse in the door anyway?
I know, I don't know. Did they have a badge?
They had to go through that revolving door, right?
So let's pull this back a little bit. How has Convergence changed specifically since we started going to it? And I think one thing that we need to take into consideration is that we are not the, you know, late 20, early 30-year-old
right.
people. So the question is, has it really changed? Or have we changed?
I think it's both.
It's both. Yeah. All right, next question.
No, I agree. Here's the thing. That for me at my age, the thing that hasn't changed, but probably I have changed, is I have zero time to put up with 22, 23-year-olds completely shit-canned for...
Nonsense, grab-ass.
Grab-ass, shit, drunk as all... And to be fair, that's really probably about over 50% of the people here right now.
Do you think in terms of demographics, Convergence has skewed younger?
Yes.
Or
And so it's brought in more. It's brought in more.
I sort of talk about, like, in life, there's a bell curve of age, you know, like the optimum age. And for the longest time, we were in that sweet spot of that bell curve. We never really came here at the early ages. Right. But now we're sort of on the downslope.
Yeah.
So do old people, you know, people in their 40s, are they just dropping out? Are they just not coming here? Are we sort of the last bastions of...
I don't know. I mean, they're still here. I still have a lot of friends that go and see. But for me, though, I think we drop out early.
Yeah.
We're fine going back to our room or back to our house at 11 p.m. or 12 a.m. and then and not getting drunk and coming back at like 10 a.m.
Yeah.
You know.
We're fine getting drunk at 5 p.m. on Thursday. And then
I'm double fisting two beers during this podcast.
Well, we're at 2 o'clock, man. You've got like 5 hours before, you know, Matlock's on.
I'm good. Where's my Matlock in space? Thank you very much. This is Convergence.
Well, we're smarter about it, too. I mean, we'll drink and maybe we'll even get drunk. But, you know, we'll know by like 10 o'clock, let's maybe start wrapping it up.
Yeah.
And so we go to bed at, you know, and we're mostly sober and don't wake up with a hangover.
And we're not going to go puke in a trash can. Yeah. We're not going to grab ass and we're not going to, you know.
I mean, I've never been that way anyway.
Not to say that this should not be a place for that, because I think that, you know, everybody needs to be able to do what they need to do. That being said,
I'd like to point how your wife leaned into you when you said, not that this shouldn't be a place for grab ass.
Right. I had a bourbon at midnight.
You did. A bourbon at midnight.
I did.
But Carrie says I'm not getting old.
You didn't have 15 fucking Romulan orange shots
You couldn't even find a Romulan here. 50th anniversary of Star Trek. You can't even find it.
Barely find
Klingons. Barely. Yeah.
That I think. But having said that, right, what also has changed is I think now that geekdom is just popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The popularity of it is bringing people in who are kind of like, I'm not really sure I'm a geek if I should be here, so I'm just going to get shit canned so I can put up with
They're here for the party only.
They're here literally for the party. They're not here for the panels. They're not here for the getting along people. It is literally it's 4 days where they don't have to throw a house party.
Yeah.
They can just throw it here.
I mean, there's always been that contingent here,
right? Sure.
Even in the mini con days, there's a lot of that, but maybe it's more so now.
Yeah, it feels like it grows every year.
I think it'd be fascinating to take a year off, because we all have that luxury.
Yeah,
just travel around the country and just see how it is done every other place.
Yeah,
you know, get a feel for, you know, how unique in a good way this place is, and then maybe, you know, some of the things
you can
that
do it without the headache of travel and having to get a hotel room when they're in.
And let's not headache. Headache really means finances. Like, if we were just rich, and we could just go, screw it.
Yeah.
Get me a suite and first-class tickets.
We're going to Atlanta. We're going to California.
Like, I know a lot of people that go to Dragon Con. I've never gone myself. It seems like at least my gathering is, it's like the perfect balance of a Comic Con meets Convergence.
Yeah,
that's kind of they get big names, but there's also a party atmosphere.
Can we just backtrack to your
first?
About the guests of honor, I do wish that they would. I wish there was tiers, right? I wish there was, like, every year there's two guests of honor that we will pay to come.
Yeah.
There's two, and then there's two guests of honor we will give, and you know, the rest we give what we regularly get.
Yeah.
Because what's nice is that you get those people out of their traditional cons that they go to.
Right.
And they're just wandering around, walking and talking. And it's just, that's what this
is. This would have to be a completely unique experience.
Yes, it is.
And since it's Minnesota, too, they probably could walk around and not be harassed.
Remember when Troy was here? Deanna Troy? Yep. Marina, how do you say her name?
Curtis?
She was fucking pissed the first day she was here.
Yeah.
She, like, was livid. She thought they weren't used to staying in the same hotel as the actual convention. They all stay at different hotels, so the fans can't
wave
them.
The heathens.
Yeah.
They are used to just, when is my time to go and sign my autographs, and where's the two Q&As I go to? They were not used to this. But by the end of it,
they got it.
She was, like, in tears at closing ceremonies, leaving, and warm and walking up to people. And it was like, oh, you know, this is what this does. I get it. Now, you're not, because fans at Convergence aren't going to just flock to an actor. They have had them here. They won't just flock to them. But if they pass by, like, hey, man, how are you? Hi.
Yep.
And like a normal person.
Yeah, it's just like, and if they'll be at the thing, hey, I really like your work, and we'll just talk and geek out. We won't be like, oh, my God, and remember that one? We won't Chris Farley them.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you bring her up, because I remember being in line trying to get into the main stage. And she was.
Remember that time?
Hey, Jude? That was awesome.
Remember that time you shot first? Yeah, that was cool.
So we were waiting in line when she was here for a main stage thing, and like people weren't bothering her. And I remember commenting to Carrie, like, you know, like nobody's talking to her. I wonder what she thinks. You know, it's just a different mentality here. People sort of let things lie. You might have a. In every group, in every fandom group, you've got crazies that will bother the hell out of somebody.
Right.
But generally speaking here, it's, you know, people just here to do their
own
thing.
It's the Minnesota thing.
It is.
There is this overriding Minnesota, like, oh, we don't want to get in your space. I'm really sorry.
You heard it a million times when Prince died.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
How Prince interacted and people didn't shit their pants every time they saw him.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like a weird L.A. thing, and people see famous people in L.A. all the time, and they can sort of live their life, and it's here.
Unless they're paid by TMZ.
Yeah.
I don't
it's a paparazzi
shit.
Show.
Yeah.
So let me ask you guys this. Let's pull out to the bigger issue of the state of the geek union.
Oh my.
So there's this book by a guy named Rob Salkowitz. I have not read the book. It is on hold, but I listened to a podcast, and he wrote a book called The Comic-Con and the Business of Pop Culture.
Yep.
And so he did a huge, essentially like a study on conventions, specifically San Diego, and then just how business and geeks sort of intersect.
Right.
And he says that he worries that we may have reached an upper limit to the public fascination with superhero movies and other geeky interests. So he specifically talks about peak geek.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you guys this.
Bit of a trademark.
Yeah.
Is that registered?
I don't
trademark?
Think it is, but we could probably jump on it.
Peakgeek.com?
Yeah.
So have we reached...
Get that.
Right now, get that,
look it up.
And let's do another podcast called Peak Geek.
Sweet.
Have we reached Peak Geek? And specifically, has geek culture been appropriated, assimilated, and gentrified by mainstream culture?
Oh.
In such a way that the influences of geek just are not as big as they used to be. Salkowitz argues that media companies already have the geek dollar. Why do they need to spend their time and money, you know, doing ad campaigns to people like us when they know we're going to go see Suicide Squad?
Right.
They know
right.
we're going to watch Arrow on TV.
Right.
It's people like my wife or other people out there that I go to work with that sort of give me the eyebrow when I tell them I'm excited about The Force Awakens.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where are we in the world of geek?
You mean your wife who's I've only ever so seen hard. At a con?
Yeah.
That wife? Okay.
She's a party girl.
She likes
to party.
So, here's the one thing I disagree
like
with
say,
on that
like,
topic.
The girls who dance in restaurants are the
that
girls who can't get wedding jobs.
Back in the day, they were giving the dollar for geek anyway.
Sure.
Because it wasn't a market. So you go back literally 15 years, only 15 years.
15 years.
20 years, you're getting nothing.
When Convergence came out, the only superhero movie of the year was X-Men. You had Star Wars and you had
Phantom Menace and The Matrix.
Yeah.
Yep.
But really comic book focused stuff, it didn't exist. It was a couple years later.
And I think that...
When did the first Spider-Man come out?
It was 2002.
2002.
One or two, somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. The thing that but I do see this kind of the peak geek, what I see is just thinking that our voice is as big as we think it is. You know, you look at Comic-Con. You know, Scott Pilgrim versus the World was huge there.
That's a huge reference this guy talks about. That was going to be the
big thing. And then nothing.
Yep.
The snakes on a plane. Yeah, big.
Oh, you're like, it's like you read the book, Romeo. What's going on here?
I haven't. But
did you write this book? Are you really? Are you really Rob Salkowitz?
No. Romeo lived it.
I lived it. Snakes on a Plane, though, didn't
it? Same thing. It was going to be huge.
So I think there's certain properties in geekdom that cross over to everybody that are more mass populous.
Yeah.
Say, like a Spider-Man, say, even, you know, Captain America. But you get Ant-Man, and that does you know, good, but it's not like the,
but it was a surprise. I mean, the expectation that it was not going to do well. But that was wasn't going to be great.
The thing was, that was in geekdom, though, because of the whole Edgar Rice not directing it.
And we missed the boat on it.
You're not right. It was really good. I think that movies such as Warcraft, you know,
unless you're in China.
But there's movies like Warcraft, and even X-Men Apocalypse is not doing good. Domestically.
Yeah.
In fact, it's not even actually doing good worldwide as much as they'd like.
Yeah. Which I think might be a good thing, if you want my opinion.
Well, it's just that we have Fantastic Four. And there's been people are like, oh, that just fell because it's bad. Like, oh, there's a lot of bad movies that make $1 billion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's not that it was just bad. It just didn't have any connection. You know?
Sure.
So I think it's those movies that can over, like, that are so populous now that you want to see it.
Yeah.
And then you have the movies that are just to that level, but they're going to make their money and they're going to do good, but they're not going to be, like, huge. And then you have those movies that just completely miss the boat. But that's just movies. I mean, I when people say, like, oh, is everybody sick of comic book movies? I'm like, that's like saying, is everybody sick of cop movies?
Or
is everybody sick of romantic comedy?
But those type of movies do have an ebb and flow in terms of popular culture.
Sure.
So that's the other side of the
coin. Yeah, but
does
it have anything to do with geeks, or is it just audiences in general that ebb and flow on that?
The thing is that the success of an Avengers movie isn't going to be because people like us go see it.
No.
I mean, you've proven it with Scott Pilgrim. You've proven it with Snakes in a Plane. So in a way, I mean, that is the double-edged sword of peak geek, is that at some point there is going to be a backlash because popular culture will want to be more interested in science fiction movies, or they might want to see cowboy movies, which that's not never going to happen because cowboy movies suck.
Hey, Tombstone. Tombstone.
Yeah.
Well, that is one of the best movies ever.
One for each of you.
That was only like 25 years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's something that will be an interesting issue for especially Marvel. And we'll talk about DC and Marvel in our next show.
What? And I'm not on that one?
You're in it too. You can stick around. We're almost the end of this.
I have a lot of beer left.
Yeah, so
I'm getting
another drink.
Be
we're
on
not
that
going
one.
Anywhere. I probably need another round here.
But the question is, in general, how does a company like Disney, which banks so much money and time and consideration with the Marvel properties, you know, how long can you keep that going? I mean, what is the end game? Is there an end game? Is it a perpetual motion machine?
No, here's my thing with Disney, though. They diversify.
Yeah. I mean, if it's not going to work, something else.
Yeah, they got Marvel, then they got Lucasfilm, and they have the Muppets, and then they have their own, and they have Pixar, and then they have their own properties.
And Star Wars.
And, well, Lucasfilm. Yeah. So that's their thing. They're diversified.
They could be a victim of their own success, though.
But they're giving. But one thing I like about Disney, and I can't believe I'm saying it, like, if you'd have like asked 15 years ago,
like, what
Disney,
the hell am I talking about?
But Disney lets them do what they need to do to make it. Yeah. Like, Disney lets Kevin Feige do his thing. Disney lets Kathleen Kennedy run Lucasfilm. They're not stepping on their toes and saying, you need to do it the Disney way.
Letting Pixar do its thing.
Pixar, like, they are just like, Pixar, you do your thing. You know, it's not letting it go.
But smart, because as things are cyclical, you know, one thing's going to be doing well, other properties may not be doing as well, and then 10 years from now, it may be the opposite. So,
but one of the things that's dangerous, though, and we'll get into this now, is this power of opinion and how quickly it changes, especially with social media. I mean,
when it becomes too popular, we just want to drag it up. Can I get another Excelsior too?
And a screwdriver for me. That's how it's done.
Drink orders are in. Let's go.
I think you have to be concerned about how popular opinion, and this ties directly what you were talking about, Romeo, about the anger and angst you get, and how easy it is to turn from loving something to shitting on something.
Yeah.
And it's almost like it's a rite of passage now. I mean, we saw it with Age of Ultron. We saw it with The Force Awakens. We saw
Batman
it with
versus Superman.
Batman versus Superman. Yeah. Some of it earned, but some of it seems a bit like, well, now it's time to be angry about something.
Here's my thing. I don't even know if it's earned, because it's like, it's okay to say, I didn't really like it that much, or, you know, it didn't really hit the points I wanted. But the anger about it is almost stupid.
You have to understand what really you're getting angry about. They're
saying if you, because you think that they're angry because they identify their personal well-being with a fictional character.
And people can get angry. People will get angry about something now because enough people around them are angry about it.
It's popular.
Or it's easy to do.
Or they have attracts a crowd like a crowd.
And or they have a political agenda like a men's rights activist thing where suddenly now I have to hate the all-female Ghostbusters.
I mean, this is the million-dollar question. Yeah. I mean, this is not a unique thing to geek culture. This is not a unique thing to popular culture. This is our culture in a whole. That it is easy to be angry. It is easy to voice that angry opinion in an undercover sort of way where you can do it and not have repercussions for it. And then you move on to the next thing.
But that, you know, that is great because that loops right back to conventions and specifically Convergence. Convergence confuses progressive with PC. To me, the difference is this. Progressive is you go out and you try to make it better and you do something about it. PC is I just want to bitch about it and be angry. And that is probably my biggest problem with this convention, is that there are so many people here that want to just be angry and bitch. They don't want to do anything about it. God forbid they do anything about it, because they have nothing to be mad about. They've identified their whole worth to a cause, not to make it work and to make it better, but just to be angry. And that's bad, because then you take the real people. Let's take feminists.
He's digging those trenches.
Here's my thing. First of all, you have to understand. Let me give you a little backstory. Raised by a single mom.
Right.
Anybody that's met my wife knows I'm a feminist. But having said that, there are just fucking idiots that you want to go get off my side.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because you're not fucking helping it. Yeah. And what I find is those are the loudest voices at this convention.
Sure.
I mean, this convention has some really stupid fucking panels about some really stupid shit that is like, really, that's a sci-fi fantasy panel? Yeah. Really? Aren't we here to just be happy and celebrate? It doesn't mean we don't have those talks.
Yeah.
But what those talks always are is I've been on a panel where this lady came out with an agenda, and she just derailed it. And our panel was supposed to be just the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And now we're talking about the mistreatment
of women
of
in
women
the Marvel.
And Scarlet Witch. Sure.
And she just, and she derailed it. It had nothing to do. And what was so weird is all of her points were so amateurish. She was very happy. What did I do?
I said, you have to have a reserve.
Oh, I do.
He's always got one in the pocket. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm derailing your.
No. I was like,
she's fuming over here.
Yeah. She had to have. So one of her points was, yes, I was kicked off Target's Twitter because I complained to them so much about not having a female action figure or enough female. I'm like, and all we could keep saying is, like, you do realize Target doesn't make the toys, right? They're resellers. Why aren't you going against the people that make them?
Yeah.
And she couldn't grasp that, right? Because in order to grasp that means you actually want to do something about it versus bitch.
Yes.
You know? And all she wanted to do was complain.
It's the problem is Romeo.
The problem is Romeo.
Are the problem.
A lot of people at Convergence actually do think that, which is great.
Oh, well, we better be very careful how we advertise this podcast here. We might be out and out. I think the problem is that everybody in this day and age feels like their problems, no matter how personalized, no matter how specific, are the most important problems.
Of course.
And that it needs to be voiced loudly, and it needs to be treated in a way that it has to be taken care of. When we understand in life, just generally speaking, that sometimes you sacrifice for the greater good of the society and the people you live with, you don't always get what you want.
Hey, I grew up with a single mom that busted her fucking ass to make ends meet in a man's world. Sorry, we are pausing for a second.
I just turned my phone off.
Bad user interface.
And so I get the real things that happen. not the oh fuck yeah. Scarlet or
I can't
or
buy a Black Widow figure.
Or Black Widow was, you know, she was mad. How dare they make it, you know, make her be mad that she couldn't have kids?
Yeah.
And all that made me mad, because I'm like, so do you think there's actually women out there that shouldn't be mad that they can't have kids, that they don't feel hurt,
yeah,
or somehow less human that they can't have kids?
You're gonna have the most boring movie ever.
Right, but not even that, but just real life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, think about it. Just because you don't want kids doesn't mean that every woman should not want kids.
Sure.
You know, or every man or whatever. It's just, it was so asinine. And at the end of the panel, what it dawned on me is, it's like, I asked, I said, how many people have seen Spy? 20% of the audience raised their hand.
Sure.
How many people have seen Mad Max Fury Road? Maybe 40 to 50% had raised their hands. I'm like, so you assholes who are bitching about not, you know, that there's not enough feminism in movies aren't even fucking going to the populist feminism movies that are out there.
Sure.
So, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
I mean, don't give me shit if you're not going to stand by your word and actually make it better.
Basically, don't just look for bad examples. Also look for the good examples.
Right.
Support those.
Right. I had to remind them that X-Men is run by a woman, Laura Donner.
Mm-hmm.
And the response I got from this panelist was so funny that we all kind of giggled, was, well, she's surrounded by men. And I'm like, oh, you're looking for everything.
Yeah.
Now you're digging. You know, you can't accept any facts.
Yes.
Facts are going to fuck you up. So you're just going to ignore them.
So everyone here knows that the scope is about solutions, Jared.
We are.
That's
our solutions first podcast.
It's in our mission statement.
All right.
Is it?
So... So, how do you
Note
overcome,
self,
how do you overcome
this
chasm, Romeo? Romeo Voigt,
here,
tell
here's
me.
My, here's my thing. If we're going to talk about...
Sherpa us through the wilderness, please.
Well, no, here's my thing. If we're going to talk about... let's equate it to this. And I said this after last year's panel, that there's the feminists that don't want... to get it better, they just want to complain, or they want to just take over, yeah, whatever it is. Then you have feminists that are like, no, we just want equal rights, and we just want to be treated the exact same, and da-da-da. That's my side. I think we're all humans. All humans should be treated the same. I don't care if you're gay, straight, black, white, Chinese, Christian, Muslim, atheist. I don't care.
Pause. Do you have a different perspective because you are a privileged white, middle-class male?
I am half Lebanese, motherfucker. I'm kidding. But I am.
Yeah.
No, I do. I do.
What? We have a secret Muslim.
We have a secret Muslim at the table.
I know. Watch out. But no, I no, I... My thing is this, is maybe, but I also am able to look at it from a practical, yeah, and realistic
there
view.
There you go, Jared.
Not yeah, a passion-fueled, yeah, anger view.
Yeah. You don't, and you're not scared of people taking your jobs. You're not,
right,
scared of geek culture overrunning you,
no,
with PC-ism.
No. No. Well, I am kind of, yeah, scared, yeah, about geek culture running me over with PC-ism.
It ain't
going to
happen. It ain't going to happen.
I don't know. It's getting worse and worse here every year. But here's my thing. It is.
We're never invited back.
No, let's just put it this way.
We have six listeners. It's all right.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. I think there is a sparrow, shall we say, that has an undermine of convergence,
sure,
that get a lot of creepy, weird shit out into panels and into the populace. But here, let's go back. How do you change it?
How do you change it?
You do it the same way the LGBT community did, where you get allies. Problem with some of these feminists, or the feminists that I've been on the panels with, they don't want allies. They want you to conquer.
They want to burn.
I can go to Pride and feel welcome.
Raise the buildings.
But if I go to Pride, I can feel welcomed. I can feel loved. I can feel like part of the team. I'm here to help. What can I do? Because you need all the equal rights we have.
Pause.
Problem is, hold on, wait.
Pause. Okay, go ahead.
Problem is a lot of feminists that are just angry. Is if you have a dick, you have no opinion. Your opinion is worthless, and you shouldn't even be talking. And now you're not making allies; you're just making enemies.
Do you think, though, Romeo, that part of this stems from the years that all people of a geek background were
Yeah.
You know, you go through times where you are the person that is picked on.
Sure.
You are the person that doesn't have a voice. So you're in a situation here where you do have a voice. And it's almost like a rubber band effect. You react as greatly as you were treated in the past. And so this is your chance to step up.
It's always tied into my idea of nerds in power.
Well,
nerds
in power
overreact. They overreact to the way they were treated before.
I look at it like this. They weren't good enough to get in the army, so they formed their own militia.
There we go.
And
you should have a right to own any kind of gun at any
place.
As long as
they are fictional sci-fi blasters.
Here's the line I crossed it, Jared. Here's the line I crossed it.
It is. What actually kind of hurts, but I love an ironic way, is that they are treating other people the way they've been treated.
There you go.
And they don't get it. They don't even fucking see it. You know, they just think they have the right. They think their pain has earned them the right to be an asshole to somebody else.
It's like that in a lot of marginalized groups, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to be a natural
human
reaction.
You hurt the ones you should be loving.
Yeah, really. That's exactly it. You are hurting the ones you should be loving.
And we decided you change it.
By getting allies.
By getting allies.
You need to soften it up. You need to go, how can I get them to understand my situation and be on my side?
Yeah.
Versus, how do I beat them to fucking death before and make them not even like me, but I don't give a shit because they're going to be non-existent.
If you burn it down, no one comes.
Right.
And that's what will happen.
Yeah. Right.
That's what will happen, Jared.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So stop it with your nonsense.
I'm full of nonsense.
Stop it with your sexism and racism and anti-gay
Haven't
agenda.
You been hearing it ooze out of me during the entire episode as I've sat here quietly?
Jared, you've said plenty.
Jared, you passed me a note saying Trump fan.
Trump fan. He did. I saw it. Yeah.
No.
Do your best Trump right now.
Never Trump.
It's tremendous.
Huge.
Huge.
Great words. Jared, I'm going to give you the final word. Final word.
Hi, if you want to email Romeo directly, his email is...
His phone number, his address, is...
Guests of The Scope Show do not necessarily represent the opinions of The Scope LLC.
Wait, what did I say?
They're all good opinions.
Yeah, I'm making a joke.
Damn it!
Well, we didn't even get to the Rogue One issue of reshoots.
Nothing big with that.
You got to save it for the next show, Romeo. Teasing is what we're doing right here. Come on, you're not a novice.
We'll
wrap up this episode.
I'm a novice at podcasts. I've only been
guess
on
what, brother?
Two.
Deep end right here.
Yes.
Deep end. So, Jared, people want to interact with The Scope Show, especially The Scope of Convergence 2016.
Yes.
What do they do?
You can email us, comments@thescopeshow.com.
Or you can walk up to Jared and fondle his ball sack.
Yeah. Wow. Well, finding me in public will be tough after this convention, so I'm going to be a hermit in a cave.
With Romeo fondling.
Hey, never lag. If you'd like to call in, our phone number is 612-21-SCOPE. You can also find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. All those links are at our website, thescopeshow.com.
Phone number for your...
Yeah, 612-21-SCOPE.
We've had years.
You guys are pros.
Call in. We are pros.
612-21-SCOPE.
612.
I worked hard to get that number.
I bet you did.
Not really. I was just quick on the draw when Google Voice came out.
There we go.
Was Geek Peek open?
The .com is taken, but there are other variations that we might be able to grab.
So let's think about that. So, Romeo, thank you.
Thank you.
You said it all. As Howard Stern would say, you said it all.
It's all my fault.
You haven't said quite as much, but what you do say is meaningful and great.
I felt like there was a conversation happening that I interjected when I needed to, but I just wanted to let it happen.
I appreciate that.
I should have just shut up more.
No,
we
love
it. So to all of our listeners, part two will be available and coming. Little teaser, it's all about specific pop culture things. So this boring thing that you don't want to hear, the next one, it will be for you.
Indeed.
So for Romeo, for Jared, and me, Shane, thanks for listening. We'll be back with more Scope and more Scope of Convergence later on in the podcast. Bye for now.
Ladies and gentlemen, we find ourselves once again at the end. I hope you've enjoyed our time together. I know I have. Fear not, Scope faithful. Days shall pass as if they were but a moment. And Jared, Adam, and Shane will return with another thrilling episode. Until then, send your comments to comments@thescopeshow.com or leave a voicemail message by dialing
612-21-SCOPE. That's 612-217-2673.
Thanks for listening, faithful fans. This is Tony Partington saying, Belle nuit. Tune in next time to another terrific edition of The Scope.